Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
América Latina obrera, no sé por qué no lo haces. El yanqui teme a la revolución. El yanqui teme grito, yanqui gojón, yanqui gojón. Y viene remontando el Amazonas, el grito rebelde del Carioca, y viene a unirse con su hermano, el obrero venezolano. América Latina obrera, América Latina obrera, América Latina. Levante en tus manos la bandera de la revolución, América Latina obrera, y grite con fuerza, Yankee Go Home, Yankee Go Home, Yankee Go Home. Gringo! Go home. Los obreros de América Latina te dicen: gringo, go home. Yankee, go home. Levante en tus manos la bandera de la revolución, América Latina obrera, y grita con fuerza: Yankee, go home. Yankee, go home. Yankee, go home.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried. We have a new year, and unfortunately, brothers and sisters, we have a new war. The early morning hours of January 3rd, 2026, the U.S. landed its soldiers in the capital of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela and kidnapped its elected president, Nicolas Maduro. 40 people were murdered in airstrikes as the U.S. bombed both civilian and military targets all around Caracas. This is blatant aggression, blatant terrorism, blatant imperialism. It's all there. An elected president was kidnapped, spirited away to a lockup in New York City. And the very next day, Donald Trump said the U.S. was going to, quote, run Venezuela, and made it plain that the empire was going to steal that country's oil, gold, rare earth minerals, etc., etc. Now he's threatening a wholesale invasion, you know, boots on the ground, the works. And the reason why he's threatening invasion is because he failed. America failed. Venezuela has not fallen. The elected government remains in power, despite the criminal abduction of its leader. And it's important to note that the Bolivarian Revolution, first kicked off in 1998 by the late Hugo Chavez, is a revolution. You cannot kill a revolution by removing one leader. It doesn't work like that. In 2002, Hugo Chavez himself was kidnapped in a U.S.-backed coup. The U.S. thought they could reassert control of the country by removing him. And they were wrong. The people came into the streets to free him, and the coup was defeated within days. Just as the Venezuelan people are coming into the streets now to defy this latest imperial attempt to destroy their country. The Bolivarian Revolution was always about the people. It was rooted always in the people and their democratic control of their nation's future, its resources, its society, its economy, its politics. You know, it was always a progressive struggle to assert popular control of these things. And despite massive pressure from the U.S., you know, hostility from the U.S., sanctions, the U.S. blowing up fishing boats and killing dozens of people, it is the Bolivarian Revolution has provided access to education, housing, and a decent life for millions of people. And the U.S. wants to stop this. Trump openly wants to take Venezuela and wants Chevron and ExxonMobil to run the country. But he's going to fail because the people won't let him. Delcy Rodriguez, the acting president of Venezuela in the wake of this kidnapping, was very clear when she said, quote, Venezuela will never be a colony of another empire, end quote. The Venezuelan people will not let empire win. The people oppose imperialism. And that's why Trump and his cronies will fail. Full stop. I want to go from there. Ben Norton of Geopolitical Economy Report did an amazing breakdown of the forces leading up to this heinous act of imperialism, this criminal act. He broke down the reasons why Trump is doing this right now, and really the desperation of the American empire just in general, of why it would resort to such a naked act of aggression at this point in history. He does an amazing job breaking everything down and the reasons for its hostility, America's hostility to Venezuela, the Bolivarian Revolution. So I want to turn things over to that right now. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
The United States is officially waging war on Venezuela. Early on the morning of the 3rd of January, Donald Trump announced that the U.S. had bombed Venezuela. And he also said that the U.S. had captured Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, and taken them out of the country. CBS News reported that Venezuela's constitutional, internationally recognized president was kidnapped by U.S. Army Special Operations Forces. That's an international kidnapping. The U.S. government kidnapped the constitutional leader of a foreign, independent, sovereign country. By waging this blatant war of aggression, what the United States is telling the rest of the world is that it believes it has the right to overthrow any government it doesn't like, to steal their natural resources, and to put in power a U.S. puppet. This is a blatant attack on international law and the basic idea of sovereignty. CBS News confirmed that the U.S. military attacked multiple cities and sites in Venezuela, including the capital, Caracas. And the United States bombed multiple military sites and also civilian sites, including airports and ports. And the leader of Venezuela's far-right opposition, Maria Corina Machado, has openly supported the Trump administration's blatant war against her country, which is extremely ironic because Maria Corina Machado won the so-called Nobel Peace Prize in 2025, and she used this so-called Peace Prize in order to advocate for a war against her country. So this raises the question, why is the United States at war with Venezuela, and what is the real goal of the U.S. government? Today, I'm going to explain the most important factors behind the U.S. war against Venezuela. And I should stress this is based not only on research I've done about Latin America and U.S. policy, but also it's based on my personal experience in Venezuela. I have been to Venezuela multiple times. I speak fluent Spanish, and I'm in contact with many friends in Venezuela, and I've been speaking to them. And it's obvious that the U.S. empire has several goals in this war on Venezuela. The broadest goal is that Washington wants to impose U.S. hegemony in Latin America and revive the colonial Monroe Doctrine. Later in this analysis today, I'll go into detail explaining each factor. Another major reason, of course, is that Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves, and it has other important natural resources, including gas and critical minerals, including rare earths, which the U.S. wants to get control of so it can create a new supply chain that cuts out China. And speaking of China, the U.S. also wants to cut off Latin America's ties with China, which has become the largest trading partner of South America. Furthermore, the U.S. wants to cut off Latin America's ties with Russia and Iran, and Venezuela has been an important ally of China, Russia, and Iran. Continuing, the U.S. war on Venezuela is also a threat to other left-wing governments in the region, especially Cuba and Nicaragua, and the U.S. government is obsessed with overthrowing the socialist governments in Cuba and Nicaragua, and that's why it has been attacking them for decades. Moreover, the U.S. is seeking to destroy the project of regional integration inside Latin America and the Caribbean, which is expressed by organizations like CELAC, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, and also the ALBA, the Bolivarian Alliance for the Peoples of Our America. And Venezuela has played a key role in encouraging Latin America and the Caribbean to unify as a region against U.S. imperialism and foreign meddling. And finally, the U.S. is seeking to sabotage the project of Global South unity, given that Venezuela has played a key role not only in trying to unify Latin America and the Caribbean, but also to unify the broader Global South, including with Asia and Africa. And especially, Venezuela's leftist government has strongly supported Palestine and Iran, as the U.S. has been waging war on Iran. And Venezuela has firmly established close ties with African countries, especially with revolutionary countries in the Sahel region of Africa, in places like Burkina Faso and Niger. So those are the main geopolitical and economic reasons for the U.S. war on Venezuela. But of course, there's also a domestic political factor in the U.S. Of course, Trump would also like to distract from the horrible domestic political scandals in the U.S. But another major factor here is Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio is the second most powerful person in the U.S. government after Trump himself. Rubio is simultaneously serving as the Secretary of State, that is the head of U.S. foreign policy, and the National Security Advisor, the head of the National Security Council. He's only the second person in U.S. history who has simultaneously held both positions after Henry Kissinger, the notorious war criminal and imperial strategist. So Rubio has played the key role in overseeing Trump's foreign policy. And Rubio comes from Miami, Florida, and he has dedicated his entire career to trying to overthrow the left-wing governments in Latin America, especially Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba. In fact, his parents were immigrants from Cuba. He falsely claimed that they were so-called refugees of communism. That's actually a lie. His parents immigrated to the United States before the Cuban Revolution in 1959. But this has been the most important mission of Marco Rubio and the far-right forces in Miami, Florida for decades. And they think that if they can succeed in overthrowing the Venezuelan government, it would cause a domino effect, and they could also overthrow the leftist governments in Nicaragua and Cuba. And Marco Rubio also thinks that if he can succeed in pulling all of this off, that he could be the next president of the United States. Rubio previously ran to be president, and after Trump's term eventually ends, who knows when, Marco Rubio would also like to be U.S. president. So what the Trump administration is doing here is trying to overthrow and destabilize all of the independent left-wing governments in Latin America and impose obedient right-wing puppet regimes that will cut ties with China, that will privatize their natural resources and sell them off to U.S. corporations, and will obediently ally with the United States in the new Cold War, Cold War II, that Washington is waging today. So let's be clear here. This war that the U.S. is waging is a blatant war of aggression that violates international law. It is an imperialist war, and it has nothing to do with drugs or trafficking or human rights or democracy or any of that ridiculous nonsense, any of those buzzwords you might have heard. That's propaganda. This is a blatant imperialist war to impose U.S. hegemony in this region and to exploit its natural resources. So let's start by talking further about Venezuela's natural resources, and then later I'll go further into detail discussing the geopolitics of the situation. Now, it's no surprise that Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves, and U.S. corporations have been desperately trying to exploit Venezuela's natural resources ever since in 2007, Venezuela's leftist former president Hugo Chavez fully nationalized the oil industry, and U.S. corporations that refused to accept a minority stake in oil projects that were majority owned by Venezuela's state-owned oil company, they left the country. And the Trump administration has been very open about the fact that it wants to exploit Venezuela's natural resources. In fact, Trump's Secretary of Energy, Chris Wright, was previously the chairman and CEO of an energy corporation, Liberty Energy, which produces both crude oil and natural gas. Moreover, during Trump's first term as president, his previous Secretary of State was Rex Tillerson, who was the chairman and CEO of ExxonMobil, another U.S. oil corporation that has been desperate to get back to Venezuela to exploit its oil. And Trump has been very open about the fact that he wants to steal Venezuela's oil. He boasted that the U.S. government illegally seized oil tankers off the coast of Venezuela, and he said that the U.S. plans to steal that Venezuelan crude oil and the tanker ships themselves.
Speaking of Venezuela, yeah. Oil, what are we going to do with the oil that we have?
Going to do with what?
The oil that has been seized. The United States seized 1.9 million barrels of oil on December 10th.
We're going to keep it.
We're keeping it. Where's it going? Are we going to sell it or put it in the strategic
oil reserve? Maybe we'll sell it. Maybe we'll keep it. Maybe we'll use it in the strategic reserves. We're keeping it. We're keeping the ships also.
Trump also claimed that Venezuela's oil and land and other assets belong to U.S. corporations.
Just a blockade. Not going to let anybody going through that shouldn't be going through. You remember they took all of our energy rights. They took all of our oil from not that long ago, and we want it back, but they took it. Getting land, oil rights, whatever we had, they took it away because we had a president that maybe wasn't watching, but they're not going to do that. We want it back. They took our oil rights. We had a lot of oil there. As you know, they threw our companies out, and we want it back.
The leader of Venezuela's far-right opposition, Maria Corina Machado, who won the so-called Nobel Peace Prize, she also has openly stated that she wants to sell off Venezuela's natural resources, including its oil and gas and critical minerals and even land, to U.S. corporations. And she promised to privatize $1.7 trillion of assets.
And this is amazing, super exciting for me. We will open Venezuela for foreign investment. I am talking about a $1.7 trillion opportunity, not only in oil and gas, which is huge, and you know that the opportunity is because we will open all upstream, middle stream, downstream to all companies, but also in mining, in gold, in infrastructure, power. We have our grid right now has a 17 gigawatt opportunity of energy potential that needs to be rehabbed. Certainly for technology and AI and tourism. You know, Venezuela has 2,800 kilometers of pristine Caribbean coastline ready to be developed. So this is going to be huge. We will bring rule of law. We will open markets. We will have security for foreign investment and a transparent, massive privatization program that is waiting for you.
In an interview with Donald Trump Jr., the son of the U.S. president, Maria Corina Machado promised that U.S. corporations will make a lot of money from buying up Venezuela's assets. Keep in mind, this is the person who won the so-called Nobel Peace Prize and who has openly supported the U.S. war against her country. These are the kind of people who win the so-called Nobel Peace Prize.
Forget about Saudi Arabia. Forget about the Saudis. I mean, we have more oil. I mean, infinite potential. And we're going to open markets. We're going to kick off the government from the oil sector. We are going to privatize all our industries. Venezuela has huge resources, oil, gas, minerals, land, technology. And as you said before, we have a strategic location, you know, hours from the United States. So we're going to do this right. We know what we have to do. And American companies are in, you know, super strategic position to invest. This country, Venezuela, is going to be the brightest opportunity for investment of American companies, of good people that are going to make a lot of money.
So it makes sense why a lot of people have focused on the oil element. This is certainly a big factor in the U.S. war on Venezuela. But I should stress it's not the only factor. There are other reasons that I'll be discussing today. In terms of natural resources, Venezuela also happens to have some important critical minerals. Now, Venezuela also has a lot of gold, which U.S. corporations would like to exploit. But Venezuela likewise has rare earth elements, and this has become a major part of the U.S. new Cold War against China. China dominates the global supply chain for critical minerals and especially rare earths, and these are necessary for production of high-tech products and including weapons and military technology for the U.S. military-industrial complex. So the U.S. government has been desperate to try to create a new supply chain that cuts out China. And the U.S. Congress even produced a report discussing plans to create a new supply chain for critical minerals. And the U.S. plan is to try to create a new supply chain in the Western Hemisphere, exploiting Latin America's natural resources. Latin America also has very significant reserves of lithium, which are needed for batteries in electric vehicles. Latin America likewise has bauxite and copper and nickel and lead and iron. Likewise, Greenland has a lot of important critical minerals, including rare earth elements, which is another reason why Trump wants to colonize Greenland and turn it into U.S. territory. So in short, what the U.S. is trying to do is to turn the entire Western Hemisphere into an imperial sphere of influence. So the U.S. empire can control all of the countries in the region from the northern tip of Canada and Greenland down to the southern tip of Argentina. And this has been referred to as the Don Roe Doctrine. Top U.S. officials themselves have referred to this as the Don Roe Doctrine. And this is, of course, a reference to the colonial Monroe Doctrine that goes back to 1823, in which the U.S. declared that all of Latin America is the U.S. empire's so-called backyard and part of its imperial sphere of influence. And the Trump administration spelled this out very clearly in the National Security Strategy it published in 2025. This document referred to the Western Hemisphere, and particularly Latin America, as the most important region for the U.S. empire, and made it clear that the U.S. wants to cut off Latin America's ties with China, and it wants to control all of the strategic natural resources and geopolitical choke points in the region in order to create this new supply chain that cuts out China. The U.S. National Security Strategy proposed the so-called Trump Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, saying it wants to cut out all non-hemispheric competitors, which is a reference to China. And it added that the U.S. should, quote, own or control strategically vital assets in our hemisphere, end quote. So the message is clear. The U.S. is saying that it owns the entire hemisphere and all of the natural resources and strategic infrastructure in the region. And by the way, when the U.S. government proposes the so-called Trump Corollary, this is a reference to the Roosevelt Corollary. That's not FDR, that's Teddy Roosevelt. This was proposed in 1904 by the ardent imperialist Teddy Roosevelt, who advocated the so-called big stick policy and gunboat diplomacy. And in 1904, Teddy Roosevelt proposed the Roosevelt Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine that said that the U.S. would militarily intervene anytime it wanted in Latin America for any reason in order to serve the interests of U.S. corporations. This is what Trump is doing today. A century later, he's bringing back this colonial doctrine and saying the U.S. will militarily intervene in Latin America to overthrow any independent government it doesn't like to help U.S. corporations control and exploit their natural resources. And more specifically, the Trump administration's national security strategy asserts that, quote, the United States must be preeminent in the Western Hemisphere as a condition of our security and prosperity, a condition that allows us to assert ourselves confidently when and where we need to in the region, winding down adversarial outside influence from control of military installations, ports, and key infrastructure to the purchase of strategic assets broadly defined, end quote. It also says that the U.S. needs to deny non-hemispheric competitors access to Latin America. That's a reference to China and to a lesser degree, Russia and Iran. But the main target is China in Cold War II. And it says that the U.S. is going to force all countries in Latin America to, quote, see us as their partner of first choice. And we will, through various means, discourage their collaboration with others, end quote. This is colonialism. This is not just imperialism. This is blatant colonialism. The U.S. is saying that all of Latin America belongs to the U.S. empire, and the countries in the region cannot have an independent foreign policy. The U.S. controls not only their natural resources and their strategic infrastructure, but it controls their government policy, and the U.S. empire decides who the leaders of all of the countries of Latin America will be. This is the message from the Trump administration. And again, this is why the U.S. government has been backing so many coup attempts and regime change operations in Latin America. This is why the U.S. government is bombing Venezuela and trying to overthrow its government. And the goal is to impose right-wing U.S. puppet regimes in all of the countries of Latin America and the Caribbean. And again, as I said earlier, the Trump administration thinks, and especially Marco Rubio thinks, that if they can succeed in overthrowing Venezuela's government, then the next targets will be Nicaragua and Cuba, which have socialist, anti-imperialist governments. And this is why the Trump administration is also trying to destabilize Brazil's left-wing government. Brazil is the largest country in Latin America with the biggest economy, and it currently has a left-wing president, Lula da Silva. And Trump has been blatantly meddling in Brazil's internal affairs. The Trump White House passed an executive order declaring an emergency for Brazil, claiming that Brazil poses a threat to the United States. And the U.S. used this to illegally impose sanctions on Brazil. And Trump has also hit Brazil with 50% tariffs. Another major left-wing government in Latin America is in Colombia. Now, Colombia has historically been an obedient right-wing U.S. ally, but for the first time in modern history, Colombia was finally allowed to elect a left-wing leader, Gustavo Petro. There had been many other left-wing presidential candidates in the past, and many of them were assassinated by U.S.-backed groups linked to drug cartels, which are also closely linked to the United States, as we'll talk about in a few minutes here. But currently, Colombia has a left-wing president, Gustavo Petro, who has been openly criticizing the U.S. and its war in Latin America. He's also been very pro-Palestine. And the Trump administration blatantly meddled in Colombia's internal affairs and imposed sanctions on the sitting president of Colombia, which was a clear threat to all of the left-wing leaders in Latin America, saying, if you don't do what we want, if you're not an obedient U.S. puppet who allow U.S. corporations to exploit your country, the U.S. is going to personally punish you. And then this also brings us to Mexico, a very large country in Latin America that also has a left-wing government, which, by the way, is one of the most popular governments in the world. The left-wing president, Claudia Sheinbaum, has an approval rating consistently of between 70 and 80%. And yet Trump is also constantly threatening Mexico, not only threatening tariffs, but Trump has said he wants to launch military strikes inside Mexico, which would be another blatant war of aggression because the sovereign independent government of Mexico has said it will not tolerate that. That would be a blatant war of aggression. So Trump and Marco Rubio are now trying to destabilize and overthrow all of the independent left-wing governments in Latin America. The main targets for their war are Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba, but they're also trying to destabilize Brazil, Colombia, and Mexico. And this year, 2026, there are elections coming up in Brazil and Colombia, and you can bet the Trump administration is going to blatantly interfere and meddle in the elections in those countries to try to help right-wing U.S. puppet leaders come into power who will help U.S. corporations exploit their countries. This is exactly what Trump did in Argentina in 2025. There were elections coming up, and Trump blatantly meddled in the elections. He offered tens of billions of dollars of U.S. government support for Argentina's right-wing U.S. puppet leader, Javier Milei, and Trump threatened the people of Argentina and said, if you do not vote for the right-wing party of the so-called libertarian anarcho-capitalist Javier Milei, Trump said that he would economically punish Argentina. And it's impossible for a country to have free and fair elections when the most powerful country in the world is blatantly meddling in their elections, threatening candidates they don't like, and then giving tens of billions of dollars to right-wing puppets. This is not a democracy. This is blatant colonialism. And Trump did the exact same thing in 2025 in Honduras, the Central American nation, which held presidential elections. The Trump administration blatantly meddled in those elections and backed some of the most blatant electoral fraud I have ever seen in my entire life. In order to put in power a right-wing U.S. puppet named Nasri Asfura, who, by the way, is a rich oligarch, and he has openly said that he's going to cut ties with China and obediently ally not only with the U.S., but also with Israel, and he's going to break relations with the People's Republic of China and recognize Taiwan, the so-called Republic of China. This is why the U.S. backed a blatant coup in Honduras, an electoral coup to steal the election. And it's also why Donald Trump personally pardoned and freed from prison the former dictator of Honduras, the right-wing drug trafficker Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was the dictator of Honduras before the current left-wing government came into power. And he was imprisoned for trafficking more than 400 tons of cocaine. And yet Trump released him from prison as a form of meddling in the elections in Honduras to put this drug traffickers party in power, which is the right-wing National Party, which is now going to govern Honduras. So this is why I stressed earlier how important it is to understand that the U.S. war on Venezuela has nothing to do with drugs. That is the ridiculous excuse being used. In reality, the U.S. government supports the worst drug traffickers in Latin America. For instance, Ecuador currently has a right-wing U.S. puppet president named Daniel Noboa, who is the son of the richest billionaire oligarch in Ecuador. And by the way, he's also a dual U.S. citizen. This is the leader of Ecuador, who's a U.S. citizen, and everyone knows that his family is deeply involved in drug trafficking, and Ecuadorian prosecutors have said that the Noboa family uses banana crates to export cocaine. And yet this is one of the most obedient, closest U.S. allies in Latin America. Moreover, the closest U.S. ally in Colombia is the right-wing former president Álvaro Uribe, who's one of the most powerful people in the country, a very wealthy oligarch. And U.S. intelligence agencies have admitted that he was an important Colombian narco trafficker working with the Medellin cartel and Pablo Escobar. And yet he is one of the closest U.S. allies in Latin America. And Marco Rubio in particular has publicly praised and defended Álvaro Uribe after he faced charges of corruption. So when the Trump administration claims that supposedly it's waging war in Venezuela because of drugs, you must understand that that's a lie. It is blatantly false. And by the way, even mainstream U.S. media outlets have admitted that the so-called Cartel de los Soles, the so-called Suns cartel that Trump claims that Nicolas Maduro and the Venezuelan government are part of, they have admitted that this is actually not real. This cartel does not exist. It was invented by the U.S. government and by right-wing opposition forces in Venezuela who have been backed and funded by the U.S. government. Venezuela is not a major drug producer. Data compiled by independent experts at the United Nations shows that Venezuela is not a major producer of drugs like cocaine. Instead, most production comes from Colombia, Peru, and Bolivia. And in fact, even a top official in the Joe Biden administration, Juan Sebastian Gonzalez, who was Biden's top advisor for Latin American affairs, even he admitted that Venezuela does not play a significant role in the drug trade. This is what he told CNN.
I want to press you on this, the narco trafficking state. This is what Juan Gonzalez, who was President Biden's national security director for the Western Hemisphere, told me about this, being that essentially only 5% of cocaine flows through Venezuela. This is what he told me.
The reason that drugs have never originated from Venezuela in the way that they originate from Colombia, over 95% of the cocaine that comes to the United States comes from Colombia, is because Venezuela has one of the largest oil reserves in the world. They have the largest gold reserves in Latin America. So there's never been a need for them to develop a native drug producing industry.
So tell me about that, because when people look at what's going on, they say, okay, they've used the drug issue to justify getting rid of Maduro, like they used the non-existent WMD issue to get rid of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. So are you, I guess what I'm asking you is, Are you concerned about that, given that it's not as much of certainly it's not fentanyl, which comes through from China through Mexico, and it's not that much cocaine, relatively speaking?
And yet Trump's Attorney General, Pam Bondi, tried to justify the kidnapping of the constitutional leader of an independent sovereign country. And she said that U.S. courts had indicted Maduro and his wife for supposedly trafficking drugs. This is completely fabricated. The U.S. government made this up. This is the new lie that the Trump administration is using to justify this illegal war of aggression, just like the George W. Bush administration falsely claimed that Iraq had so-called weapons of mass destruction in order to justify its illegal invasion. In fact, the Trump administration was literally copying the exact same language of the Bush administration, and Trump signed an executive order declaring fentanyl to be a so-called weapon of mass destruction, a WMD. Just like Bush. I mean, this is how low effort their war propaganda is. And by the way, I already showed how Venezuela plays an absolutely insignificant role in the production of cocaine. But when it comes to fentanyl, I mean, this is a complete joke. Venezuela has basically nothing to do with fentanyl. This is another lie from the Trump administration. But now that the US regime has illegally kidnapped the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, the U.S. regime is going to force him to go through a show trial in a kangaroo court, claiming that supposedly he's involved in drug trafficking. Keep in mind, that's completely illegitimate. It's all based on lies manufactured by the U.S. government, which is literally allied with the worst drug traffickers in Latin America. Donald Trump just pardoned from prison one of the worst drug traffickers on earth, the former dictator of Honduras, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who worked with the Mexican drug lord El Chapo Guzman and who stole elections. Again, this war in Venezuela has nothing to do with drugs and nothing to do with so-called democracy and human rights. It is blatant imperialism. It is colonialism. So going back to this list that I made of the reasons for the U.S. war in Venezuela, I now want to also talk about some of the other geopolitical implications, especially China. It's very important to understand that the U.S. government has been desperately trying to cut off Latin America's relations with China, which has become the largest trading partner of the region when you exclude Mexico. And especially when you look at South America, you can see that China is the largest trading partner, not only of Venezuela, but also Brazil, Peru, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, and others. So the U.S. has been trying to cut off China's relations with the region. Economically, that's very difficult to do. So the Trump administration is especially focusing on trying to cut off China politically. And in the first trip that Secretary of State Marco Rubio took abroad, he went to Latin America. In particular, he went to Panama, and there he threatened Panama and forced Panama to withdraw from China's global infrastructure project, the Belt and Road Initiative. And you can bet that the U.S. government is now going to try to force other countries in Latin America to withdraw from the Belt and Road Initiative as well. And the Trump administration is going to target key infrastructure in the region. It's very likely that the next target will be the massive port of Chancay, which is in Peru on the Pacific coast. And China helped to build this port, which is one of the biggest in the region. And there are many reports suggesting that Trump is going to target that next. And getting back to Venezuela, the U.S. war in Venezuela is also aimed at China, which is the largest trading partner of Venezuela, and China imports about 80% of Venezuela's oil. The U.S. has illegally imposed sanctions on Venezuela to try to economically suffocate Venezuela, and China provided Venezuela with an economic lifeline by buying a lot of that oil. And by the way, another reason that the U.S. empire has been targeting Venezuela for years now and trying to overthrow its government is because Venezuela has also challenged the petrodollar system, and Venezuela has sold its oil in Chinese yuan, RMB, not just in U.S. dollars, which is a direct challenge to the global dominance of the U.S. dollar. I'm not saying this is the only reason for the U.S. war on Venezuela, but it's certainly a factor. Just like how in the lead up to the illegal U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, Saddam Hussein was also de-dollarizing and selling Iraq's oil for other currencies, including the euro, and Iraq is a major oil producer. Again, I'm not saying this is the only reason for the U.S. invasion of Iraq. There were many other factors, just as with the U.S. attack on Venezuela and this war of aggression, there are many factors, but this is certainly one of them. And Venezuela's partnership with China has been very deep, and it goes back decades. It's important to understand this factor as well, because today China is, of course, a major trading partner of most of the countries in Latin America. But politically, Venezuela was one of the first countries to form a close political partnership with China. This goes way back to 1998, when Hugo Chavez, this leftist revolutionary, won the democratic election to become the president of Venezuela. And then in 1999, when he became president, he gave a very prescient speech in which he said, quote, "Fortunately, the world of the 21st century will not be unipolar or bipolar. It will be multipolar," end quote. He said that in 1999. This is how much of a visionary Hugo Chavez was. He could see how the U.S. empire's power was declining, especially with the rise of China and the global south. And he wanted Venezuela to play a leading role in unifying the global south against U.S.-led imperialism. And in 1999, right after Chavez came to power, he famously went to China and he ran on the Great Wall. It was a big news story at the time, but it symbolically showed how Venezuela was deepening its partnership with China across the Pacific Ocean. And this was a very significant change, because if you go back to the first Cold War, Latin America had very limited relations with China. In fact, if you look at Venezuela, for instance, between 1974 and 1998, Venezuela only signed 20 agreements with China. They were not close partners. But then between 1999, when Chavez became president, and then 2017, when Nicolas Maduro was president, Venezuela and China signed 472 agreements. Venezuela played a key role in bringing China more into Latin America as an equal partner. China was not conquering the region like the U.S. empire has done. The U.S. has backed coups and has militarily intervened in almost all of the countries in Latin America, blatantly violating its sovereignty, treating this region as the U.S. empire's so-called sphere of influence and its so-called colonial backyard. China has not done that. Many countries in Latin America have wanted close ties with China because China does not interfere in their internal affairs. China respects their sovereignty and treats them as an equal. And again, this is why Venezuela has been deeply symbolic, because ever since Hugo Chavez came to power in 1999 and launched the Bolivarian Revolution, Venezuela was one of the first countries to form this close partnership with China, which at the time was unprecedented. And after Chavez died in 2013 and Nicolas Maduro won the presidential elections and became the next president, he also continued to deepen Venezuela's alliance with China, which is one of the main reasons it has been a target of the U.S. empire. But as I mentioned in the list of reasons for the U.S. war on Venezuela, it's not just because of Venezuela's close partnership with China. Venezuela also formed a close alliance with Russia, which is another major target of the U.S. empire. And there are very few countries in Latin America that have close ties with Russia. I mentioned that, of course, China is the largest trading partner of the region. So, of course, it makes sense that many countries do have friendly relations with China, even if they're not politically closely allied with China. But Russia does not have many close partners in Latin America. And Venezuela has been one of the key Russian partners in the region, which is another reason it has been a target of the U.S. empire. And then there's also Iran. Venezuela formed a close partnership with Iran, another country that has been suffering under illegal unilateral sanctions since it had a revolution that overthrew a U.S.-backed dictator in 1979. And Venezuela formed a close partnership with Iran, which yet again made it a target of the U.S. empire. And this also brings us to other countries in the global south, because since Hugo Chavez was president and started the Bolivarian Revolution, and that has continued with Nicolas Maduro, Venezuela has been a close ally of global south anti-imperialist movements seeking the unity of Latin America, Asia, and Africa against U.S.-led imperialism. And of course, One of the key symbols of this is Palestine. Venezuela has always strongly supported Palestine under both Chavez and Maduro, which again angered the U.S. empire. And Venezuela has been strongly supportive of African countries in their fight for sovereignty, resisting Western neocolonialism. And earlier I mentioned Burkina Faso, which has a revolutionary government, and there are also revolutionary experiments happening in other parts of the Sahel region in Africa. And Venezuela has been strongly supportive of these revolutionary movements, and representatives of Burkina Faso have traveled to Caracas to meet with President Maduro to deepen this partnership against Western imperialism. And of course, inside Latin America and the Caribbean as well, Venezuela has been a key voice and a force pushing for regional unity against imperialism. And Venezuela was one of the co-founders of the Bolivarian Alliance for the Peoples of Our America, known as the ALBA. And the other half of the name is TCP, which is a trade treaty for the peoples, as opposed to a treaty for corporations. And this is an economic bloc that has sought to deepen the economic integration of the region and has also challenged the global dictatorship of the US dollar. And they even briefly experimented with creating a new currency for bilateral trade among countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. And this really angered the US empire, which targeted members of the ALBA with regime change operations and coups to try to force countries like Ecuador and Honduras to withdraw from the ALBA, which they succeeded in, and Bolivia as well. And finally, this also brings me to another very important organization in Latin America, which is the CELAC, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, which was created as an alternative to the U.S.-dominated Organization of American States, the OAS, which is based in Washington and basically controlled by the U.S. government. Venezuela has always been strongly supportive of CELAC and these other organizations pushing for the unity of Latin America against imperialism, which again made it a major target. So altogether, those explain the most important reasons for the U.S. empire's war of aggression against Venezuela. This blatantly violates international law. It blatantly violates the UN Charter. And it shows how the US is a rogue regime that spits in the face of international law, that violates international law more than any other country on earth, that is constantly invading foreign countries and overthrowing independent sovereign governments. This is imperialism. This is the true face of the United States. It has nothing to do with democracy and human rights and any of that nonsense. And I hope today this helped to explain what is truly going on in Venezuela and the world. On that note, I'm going to conclude. I am Ben Norton. I'm the editor-in-chief of Geopolitical Economy Report. I want to thank everyone for joining me today. I will see you all next time.
I pity the country, I pity the state, and the mind of a man who thrives on hate. Small are the lives of cheats and of liars, of bigoted news press, fascist town crier. Deception annoys me, deception destroys me. The Bill of Rights froze me. In jails, they all know me. Frustrated are churchmen, the saving of soul men, the tinker, the tailor, the colonial governor. They pull and they palm me. They're seeking to draw me away from the roundness of the light. Thank you. silly civil servants. They thrive off my body. Their trip is with power, back begging and welfare. Police, they arrest me. Materialists test me. Pollution, it chokes me. Movies, they joke me. Politicians exploit me. City life that jades me. Hudson Bay fleets me. Hunting laws freak me. Government is bumbling. Revolution's rumbling. To be ruled in impunity is tradition continuity. I pity the country. I pity the state. And the mind of a man who thrives on hate.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and that was Willie Dunn. I pity the country. It's important to note that there's a lot of international solidarity with Venezuela as it faces up to the aggression of the American empire. There's been a lot of demonstrations. There's been a lot of vocal support around the world, whether that's in Cuba, whether that's in India, from like the student movement and the trade union movement in India, or people in the United States itself and in Canada. There's a protest going on, I believe, right now as we speak in Toronto. So if you get a chance to go to one of these actions and stand in solidarity with Venezuela, please do. It's important that we all do this, engage in our internationalist duty at this time, stand with the Venezuelan people as they stand against this aggression that is being forced on them, and that we stand with them until victory. Because the people will win. The people will win. Imperialism will lose. Doesn't matter what dirty tricks that Trump or whoever else cooks up in Washington. The Venezuelan people will not allow themselves to become a colony again. They will not be colonized again. They will stand firm, and we should stand with them and lend our voice to support them at this time and not be fooled by nonsense about, like, you know, drug trafficking or whatever other like nonsense gets cooked up by Trump and all his talking heads and all his cronies. Because it's nonsense. It's all an excuse to grab the goodies, grab the resources that he wants. You know, the oil, the gold, and all that other stuff. That's the reason why he's going into Venezuela, and also to eradicate the progressive dreams of the Venezuelan people. And once again, he will fail. He cannot do that. That spirit cannot be crushed. And it's not for sale. So with that, I want to conclude. Thank you for listening, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, to another episode of Back in the USSR. And Happy New Year to everybody. Solidarity. And I will see you all in the next one.